Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. And we are not recapping a game today. We don't really have a game tonight. We've got a game tomorrow, but we figure, hey, let's just take a moment, kind of reflect on the last couple games since the All-Star break, the next few games coming up, and just some of the what's in the headlines in the NBA and for the Miami Heat, just kind of taking an inventory of what's going on exactly here. And first and foremost, Chris Bosh is that March 1st deadline that we've been talking about for almost a year now is coming up, and by the time you hear this, it could be today, where we're expecting the Heat to start the process of clearing Chris Bosh's roster spot and salary off the salary cap via a bunch of weird NBA rules machinations, basically saying Chris Bosh hasn't played a game in over a year, right, and if he is seen as unfit to continue his playing career, the Heat could have his contract wiped, and that process could start on March 1st.
Yeah, he looks like he's in pretty good shape, but from all the reports we've heard from, particularly from the Miami Herald's Barry Jackson, him and his camp have not indicated that they have any interest in playing this season. So our concern was at the start of the year when we started hearing what the possible scenarios could be, were that, particularly when there was some pretty, visible tension between Bosh and the front office,
right,
it seemed like he was determined to play again as soon as possible, that he was upset with the team for somewhat preventing him from being out there on the floor, and that he might be able to, play the 25-game minimum that would allow him to be part of a playoff-contending team. It doesn't seem like that's the case. He's given up any hope of playing the season. Whether or not he ever plays again remains to be seen. But for now, it looks like it's a pretty safe bet for Miami to go ahead and waive him and remove that money from the salary cap.
Just a quick recap, basically. The last time Chris Bosh played a basketball game in the NBA was February 9th of last year. So this league, this exception that we're talking about requires the player to have not played for a full calendar year. So Bosh, the Heat were eligible to try to clear Bosh's spot and contract off the salary cap since February 9th, and they wanted to wait until March 1st because any player waived after March 1st cannot participate in the playoffs, and the Heat are doing this in order to try to minimize or eliminate the risk, basically, of Chris Bosh playing 25 games this season, because if the Heat were to go through this process and the NBA Players Association and the NBA front office both agreed Bosh can't play, but then he were to somehow miraculously come back and play 25 games, everything would be reversed except for Bosh being on the roster. But his salary would go back onto the cap, and Miami wouldn't have this cap space to go and chase free agents in the future, and they wouldn't have Chris Bosh. Whatever team you played 25 games plus for would have Chris Bosh still. So that would be the risk, right?
Absolutely.
You wouldn't have cake and you wouldn't be able to eat it, basically. So that's why we're here on March 1st and not doing it earlier on February 9th. So look, it looks like a pretty solid bet that Bosh isn't playing, as you alluded to, Chris, or Barry Jackson's reporting is showing that. And then Chris Bosh on Monday night participated in TNT's Players Only broadcast as a panel. He sat in for Shaquille O'Neal, I guess, in the studio. And Chris Webber, who was filling in for Ernie Johnson, asked Chris Bosh about, his health and how he's doing.
Well, how is your health right now? What's your state of mind? What are you going through?
Oh, my health is great. I think one of the interesting things that I didn't anticipate was my mental health. And that's something that, as athletes, we have to take into regard because we're used to a set schedule and we're used to a certain type of world. And that's something that I've really had to work on. for my well-being, and it's been great. My health is great. I'm feeling good, still working out, and just really still staying ready.
Now, I saw those beautiful babies, your beautiful family, so I know they keep your head, you know,
oh, yeah, right in the absolutely. Tub, they're asking me when I'm coming back, so, you know, I'm getting pressure from them too.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
So he mentions a few things there. Basically says at the end, though, that he's staying in playing shape and that his kids are pressuring him to get back on the court. I don't know if that was more of a joke among former players or what that was. But look, if Jackson is reporting that Bosch isn't returning and then he's joking around, like, is that just him keeping his options open, essentially?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, certainly we've always appreciated that side of Bosch, the family man that is, you know, such an interesting person off the floor as well as on it. And to me, my perspective is that just that's how his kids have always defined him. You know, children tend to look up to their parents and have like a pretty clear cut idea of who they are. And they probably always define that role of father as the guy who's gone for most of the year, but is a superstar and affords them a certain, you know, luxurious lifestyle. And then they can spend time with him during the summer when he's not necessarily playing and things of that sort. But you know, they probably see him being the active, physical athlete, and he's no longer that person. They see him around now. They're kind of, I'm sure as they, you know, they're probably gone through school years where they haven't necessarily had him be an active member, of the PTA, or he hasn't been able to go to school performances and things of that sort. Now, all of a sudden, Chris is able to go to parent-teacher meetings and find out what's going on, maybe be a part of bake sale somewhere in South Florida. Gosh. So could you imagine? I mean, I could totally picture it, right? I'd buy a donut off Chris Bosch.
I bet you Bosch is good at baking. He's just like, he makes his own beer, right? And that's a very mathematical, sure, scientific process. I bet you he makes bomb cookies.
Yeah, I could totally see that. Like, say, yeah, I bake these cannoli myself or something like that, you know? So, and now all of a sudden they're seeing him a lot more often. They're probably going, you know, Dad, what's up? You know, why aren't you
seeing him on TV anymore, right? Like, what little kid doesn't want to see their parents on television, right? Like, that's just a cool thing. And they're, like, used to seeing, you know, their dad on TV, like, almost every other night. And now they're not. And they're probably sick of him at this point if he's just messing around. I mean, he also mentioned earlier in that soundbite that, you know, he feels fine, but that thing that players don't really think about all that often, right, is the mental fitness or the mental health, I should say. And right, and that's really where that came in. I can only imagine he going through bouts of depression and what am I doing with my life? If I'm not playing basketball, who am I? That whole thing. And as much as a well-rounded, interesting person we talk about Chris Bosch being, he really, like, the core of him is a basketball player. That's what he hangs his hat, sure, on. And to not have that, it would be like if you and I didn't have this podcast. It'd be like, who are we even? Like, what's the point of our lives? What are we doing?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's a perfect analogy there. But, you know, to his point, though, I think that's partly why he's involved in the TNT broadcast, because he's not really allowed to be around the team. Like, you know, even if a player is injured, you know, they tend to be there. Like we saw last season, he was still there at home games. He wasn't traveling with the team, but he was still a fixture on the American Airlines Arena sidelines and cheering on, you know, Dwayne Wade and Joe Johnson and Luol Deng and guys like that. He can't do that this year. You know, he's basically been told by the team, you know, we don't want you around. And I think it's probably a mutual feeling from his place. So he's suddenly a man without a home. He can't necessarily be involved in the sport that's defined his life for, you know, 20 plus years.
So he's hanging out with Dwayne Wade.
He did. Yeah. During the All-Star break, mm-hmm, there were pictures of him on a boat. I'm not sure whose boat it was, hanging out with his wife, Adrienne, and Dwayne hanging out with his wife, Gabrielle. So, you know, they're clearly still connecting as, you know, friends and players want to do. And that's, it makes perfect sense. So it seems like he's happy at least. And that's, I think, something all Heat fans can appreciate, even if we can't see him out on the floor.
Yeah. He was good on TNT. I thought, you know, we had talked about he's going to be on TNT for the next five Mondays. I don't know if it's his players only broadcast for the next five Mondays or what's going on. But I hope not, because I really miss Ernie Johnson and all the guys. But look, he shouts to Brent Berry, though. He did a good job doing play-by-play. Bosch is going to be on there for the next 5 Mondays. I thought he did a good job in his first appearance. I thought he could have been a little bit more aggressive, maybe getting into the conversation a little bit more. I would have liked to heard more from Chris Bosch, because, look, he was there with Chris Webber, who's filling in the Johnson spot. Baron Davis was on there, and somebody else I'm forgetting. Oh, Isaiah Thomas was there, and Isaiah Thomas is fine, as always. Like, he's not going to blow your mind with anything, but he's not an idiot either. Like, he's fine. He's just fine.
Tell that to Knicks fans.
Yeah, that's true. At broadcasting, I should say. Yeah. Baron Davis was raw, and not sure how he knew how to dress for the occasion. But
he did not.
But I thought Bosch was probably... Look, I want to hear Bosch say more things, and I don't know if you've gotten a chance to watch Kevin Garnett's Area 21.
I've seen parts of it, yeah. I mean, that's, I think, a little different. I don't know if it's necessarily suited for a guy of Bosch's temperament, I think.
No, not anything close to that, yeah.
Yeah, Garnett's definitely a little bit more in your face, bit more brash.
He was with Latrell Sprewell.
Oh, that must have been a hell of a broadcast.
Well, they were both terrible. Like, you could tell, like, the most fun they had was at commercial breaks or when they weren't on screen, and then they would go on screen and they'd, like, fill time by saying, like, basically, like, it's kind of funny because all these players during the broadcast, they ended up just reverting back to their player cliches, like their basketball cliches, even though they're not, you know, under the guise of a PR department anymore. Or,
right.
You know, they could say whatever they want. They're being hired to just have opinions, and that they all kind of revert back to, like, those cliches that they just have been spitting up, like, for 20 plus years of playing basketball. But anyway, we digress. Back to Bosch.
Can I digress a little bit more?
Let's
there? I'm curious that Latrell Sprewell, considering the player that he was, as outspoken and, you know, shout out to PJ Carlissimo's neck, you know, I'm a little surprised that that he was willing to accept James Dolan's invitation to sit courtside the game following his ejection.
I've heard rumors that he got paid off to do it.
That I have no doubt. I mean, again, you know, we're talking about Bosch being fairly nomadic at this point. You know, Sprewell pretty notably said he had to feed his kids and rejected a fairly lucrative offer to come back to the Knicks and wound up signing half as much money with the Minnesota Timberwolves, you know, playing alongside Kevin Garnett. And, you know, he was always a pretty brash player. So it's interesting, one, to see him be so tame on a broadcast, but also be willing to sit alongside a guy like Dolan, who, you know, I don't think has the respect of any player in the association. So to see him and Larry Johnson, you know, two guys that hurt the Miami Heat in the past, sitting next to Dolan, that was surprising, to say the least. Probably a little disappointing, I think, as well.
The whole post-playing careers of basketball players, and we talk, you know, going, even taking this whole mental health thing with Bosch and, like, the whole what's my identity situation, taking that further, it goes to everybody. Like, once you retire, they're retiring at 35 to 40 years old, very young. Like, what do you do for the rest of your life? It's very – and if you're Kevin Garnett, you get your own segment on TNT that's, like, quite frankly, not very good. It's not good. Like, there's nothing I learned from that. It's not good. I don't know. Like, it's kind of funny how these, and I, you know, you got to give them an opportunity to get better. They're rookies at it. You got to give them an opportunity to get better, but I don't know. It's kind of funny. So the players only broadcast just in general is an intriguing idea. I wonder if it went as well for TNT as they hoped.
I think it'll draw viewers, you know, at first, because you want to see these players that you connected with as fans, and you hope that they'll be able to bring something to a broadcast, but that's rarely the case. For as much as, you know, a guy like Charles Barkley is criticized, and rightfully so, for some pretty stupid opinions, at least he's polished enough to handle that responsibility of being in front of a camera. Maybe that wasn't something that he could handle, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but he's been doing it for a while now, and he's comfortable in that role as a entertainer, a provocateur.
He's won Emmys. Good at being in front of the camera. Like, agree or disagree with his opinions, like, that's kind of his shtick, right? Like, it's a Skip Bayless, it's a Colin Coward thing. Like, it's a shtick. That's fine. Like, he gets people to talk, and he gets people to tune in because they want to be part of the conversation. He's good at being on camera. People say, well, he doesn't speak well. Like, you know, that's just the way he pronounces words is funny, but he doesn't stumble over himself, right? Like, he has an idea that he speaks. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you're right. That Alabama drawl is still going to find its way there when he says terrible every once in a while. But right. I mean, that's just, but I think he's comfortable. That's just who he is. It's always been who he is. And that's fine. But I anticipate that Bosch will find that cadence as well, because I think there's just so much that's admirable about Bosch, whatever your feelings about the way his career in Miami ended. And that's something that we'll have to address probably at some point in the near future. But, for now, I think he's just always been such a well-rounded individual off the floor. All of his interests is a guy who seems to really want to suck the marrow of the bone of life, taking on whatever he can, whether it's coding or playing acoustic guitar or making beer or traveling the world. I mean, this is a guy who's been to India and Africa and South America and all over the place. I mean, to go there with his wife and kids on the Bosch World Tour every summer.
Other NBA players are going to the Bahamas every summer, and every chance they get, like, he's learning stuff and he's exploring and pushing the envelope. Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny that you mentioned the Bahamas, because I was just talking to a few guys following the All-Star break, and I was talking to Portland's Alan Crabb, and I asked him, what did you do during the break? He's like, I went to the Bahamas. And, I know that Terrence Ross had gone out there in a couple of
Do all
others,
these NBA like, players just, like, run into each other at the Bahamas? Like, you're staying at this hotel, too? Do you just, like, walk in the elevator, and you're like, hey, Terrence Ross? Like,
yeah, I asked him, what's in the Bahamas? Because, I'm like, and I said, look, I'm from Miami, so I'm pretty used to, like, the sun and beaches and stuff like that. He's like, yeah, that's pretty much it. There's the beach and the pool area. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, pool area, stuff that AKA free drinks and women in bikinis. We got it.
I mean, yeah, sure. And he's like, and shops and restaurants and scuba diving. I was like, yeah. All good things, which I'm sure that you can take a lot of advantage of.
I'm sure Alan Crabb goes scuba diving every day in the Bahamas. I'm sure it's worked in his contract that he's allowed to do that.
Conversely, I do understand that if you're there in freezing temperatures in Portland, you probably want to get away from all that, and the furthest away that you can possibly go to and still be near the continental U.S. is Jamaica and the Bahamas.
Look, I'm not blaming anybody. It was 35 degrees here in Northern California when I woke up this morning and left the house. I could use the Bahamas right now. I'm okay with that. back to
especially an NBA player's salary too, when you can really take advantage of everything you can do there.
Speaking of NBA player salaries, Chris Bosh's salary could come off the books, but
nice.
let's get back to that. The one thing that we really haven't spoke about much is the whole insurance situation, right? Because when Bosh's salary comes off the books, the Heat are still on the line to pay that salary. It's not reflected in the salary cap. Correct. So they'll still have those $24 million to spend that Bosch's, contract was taking up in the salary cap. But Mickey Arison and the Miami Heat organization still have to pay that contract, which is something almost $80 million. It's $76 million in total remaining on that deal. It's going to be less than that because this season's almost over. So
prorated amount for the next 20-something game.
Right. So once that happens, look, insurance is going to take up a little bit of it. The Heat still have to pay a little bit of it. And Albert Namad of HeatHoops.com did a really good breakdown of basically how this works. And look, I know you don't care about how much Mickey Arison pays. I don't care how much Mickey Arison pays. Fans, they talk about not paying players a lot of money sometimes. But really, when it comes down to it, like, if Mickey Arison's taking money out of his wallet to put a championship roster on the floor, that's fine. The Heat have had one of the highest payrolls in the league for the last several seasons. But one thing he doesn't like to do is go into that luxury tax. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because even if Bosch's cap comes off the books, according to Albert of HeatHoops.com, the Heat are going to be paying around between $11 and $13 million a season after insurance takes care of roughly half of Bosch's contract. So that's 12-ish million dollars a year that we're not seeing reflected in the salary cap, but that Mickey Arison still has to pay Chris Bosh. So chances of the Heat going over the salary cap or even dipping into the luxury tax are very slim when Arison already has to pay $12 million. He's not going to want to pay any more money than he already has to over these next several seasons, right?
Right.
So as far as roster construction goes, that's where it could start affecting fans. And that's why I wanted to bring that up. Moving on past that, though, the Heat will get salary cap relief. they will have some relief immediately, but really where this starts affecting the Heat is this summer. But we've gone over free agent options and offseason plans, and we have no idea what's going to happen. But what we can maybe get a sense of is short-term, the Heat are going to have an open roster spot. Do they fill somebody in? We covered Willie Reed already, but seeing how the Heat lost to the Mavericks without Willie Reed, I thought they really missed those extra minutes of rim protection when Whiteside was on the bench. Maybe it's, you know, with this process starting, however long it takes to clear Bosch, do they go after a Jared Sullinger? Do they go after a Terrence Jones? I mean, look, Andrew Bogut signed with the Cavs. He's gone. I don't know, outside of Jones and Sullinger, what centers the Heat might be going after here. Should they go after a center? What do you think?
I think that's probably the logical way to go. I think a front court player would probably help, just because you don't want to – I mean, you don't – look, if Reed's already experiencing injury issues this late in the season, you don't want anything to happen to Whiteside and Ellison and be really depleted at that position. The only other guy that's available to play any minutes at the center position is either an undersized James Johnson or Udonis Haslam, who at this point in his career really can't contribute much. So you think – they'd be most likely to bring somebody up. And you know, you've mentioned to me in the past that John Henson over in the D League at the Sioux Falls Skyforce is an option as well, right? He's a guy that Keith Benson, right?
Keith Benson. John Henson goes to the Bucks. Yeah.
That's right. Sorry.
We were texting about him, is why I put that in your brain.
That's right. So, I mean, Keith Benson is a guy that they could possibly bring in there to provide a little length as well. I mean,
good option.
I've heard Luis Scola is an option. I think he's a guy that
is washed.
The Nets might be. I'm sorry. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean,
he's washed.
It's been a while, but
he couldn't get playing time for the Nets. I think that's that would be quite the reclamation project for Eric Spoelstra.
He ostensibly plays the center position. Mm-hmm. So you wonder if maybe – look, from everything we've heard about Scola, as much as we hated watching his greasy head bop up and down for the Indiana Pacers, you know, he's a good team guy, really, really nice, off the floor, knowledgeable, et cetera. So a good locker room presence. So you wonder if you're not trying to disrupt chemistry too much – maybe a guy who's an experienced veteran like him would be, provide some benefit. But I just don't think that's what Miami's mindset is either. They'd want to sign somebody, I think, who has potential to add to this team, not just this season in the future, or a young project that they could kind of start to mold. You know, we saw that last year with Briante Weber. You're seeing with Roddy Magruder and O'Kara White this season. You figure they'd probably keep somewhere along that line of thinking.
Well, the other thing is, if this Heat team is chasing the eighth seed, and who knows? Maybe they could get as high as a seventh seed. I don't know. Right? Like the difference between the seventh seed and the eighth seed is two games. So, but if they're chasing this eighth seed, they're probably going to be playing the Cavaliers in that first round. Do you look at to add some? Because you can add somebody now as long as they've already been released, right? You can add somebody now who could participate for you in the playoffs. Is there something that, look, the Heat aren't going to beat the Cavaliers in the first round, but if you're in the playoffs, you ought to try, right? You might as well. And do you look at signing somebody who might, you know, when Willie Reed comes back, if they sign a center now, that center's probably not going to play a whole lot, unless you get like a power forward center tweener, but even then, their rotation seems pretty set. Like, I don't know if you're going to get anybody, as much as we rag on Luke Babbitt, I don't know if you're going to get anybody realistically to supplant Babbitt at this point in the season, right? There's only 20-ish games left to get them ready and in condition to play and all this stuff. I mean, these are guys that got bought out. These are guys that are rejects from other teams. I don't know if they're necessarily going to supplant Babbitt in the starting lineup at this point. Do you get a guy, though, that could be a contributor off the bench who matches up well against Cleveland? I don't know who that would be. I don't know if you're maybe at that point looking for, you know, backup wing help to guard guys like Deron Williams and J.R. Smith, and of course LeBron, and Richard Jefferson, and all these guys, like, they're deep on wings. Kyle Korver, like, do you go and add maybe a guy like that with a little bit more length? Because that's something that the Heat don't really have. I mean, hell, they're starting 6'4", 200-pound Roddy Magruder at small forward. Like, do you add somebody like that?
I mean, it just seems like I think they're pretty well off there. As far as guys that could play a number of positions, yeah, Magruder plays a small forward position. Exactly. Yeah, Richardson coming back. I mean, theoretically, couldn't Justice come back for the playoffs as well? I don't think that's realistic, but I mean, it's an option. We'd heard that rehab schedule might bring him back for the playoffs if at all. But you know, at that point in time, Miami talking about the playoffs seemed like a pipe dream, and you know, now obviously it's much more realistic. So you wonder if maybe they could accelerate the timetable a little bit to try and get him back in time to provide some adequate defense there. But yeah, you're right. I mean, with Josh Richardson coming back, arguably if you just brought in a key rotation player, he's gotten minutes over the last couple of games after the All-Star break. He seems like he's, you know, shaking that rust off, but he can contribute at least defensively if you throw him out there. And, you know, Spoelstra is always one to tighten his rotations a little bit when he's in the playoffs, going, you know, not as deep as he's been this season during the regular season. So you wonder if maybe he'll stick with the same rotations, you know, or tighten it a little bit. And, you know, maybe just bring in Tyler Johnson occasionally off the bench. You know, I guess he's a fairly key contributor. I don't know. I'm trying to think at this point whether or not it's probably better to bring in a wing player. I don't know that there's any out there that it seems like he would be a capable player who would fit in and not disrupt thing and not expect too much out of a limited stint in Miami. I just, you know, we've talked about
Omri Caspi,
the motivation.
I mean, he's not a defensive
guy, though.
Yeah, if he's healthy.
Not, no, he's not. He spaces the floor, though, which is something that Miami might be able to help. How's he for running the floor? He doesn't seem like a good pace guy, right? Is he?
Yeah, he's fine. Like, he's not. I mean, what he could do is he can hit threes, so he doesn't have to get all the way down the floor, right? He only has to get above the break, and he's fine.
Okay.
I'm looking through free agents right now. Did Lance Stephenson end up sticking in Minnesota or wherever he was?
Well, he's still hurt, isn't right? So I don't think they have to debate whether or not to sign him to a second 10-day. I'm not sure if that's been decided. Now, you know, I'm curious. Cleveland, obviously, they picked up Deron Williams and Andrew Bogut. Does that mean that Derek Williams' time is done there with the Cavaliers?
Ooh.
I don't think Miami's eligible to re-sign him, though, right? Because they waived him, right? So that's not an option either.
Yeah, and good, because he wasn't good. look, I don't know. Like, it might just be a D-League guy that we're not thinking of. I mean, they might end up bringing back Marcus Georges Hunt. I don't know. Like, it's just, you know, they've got options, I guess. But
you know, last year that was one of our complaints. Yeah, we weren't too happy about that addition when they clearly needed somebody with a little bit more size. Maybe a guy like Jarnell Stokes would have fit in pretty well, and they chose to go with Weber instead. So I'm not sure at this point what the best options are.
Well, I guess we'll find out, right? Because they're going to have an open roster spot. I think the most likely situation, depending on how long this Willie Reed situation plays out, is a big man just to replace. And that's okay, right? Like, we're talking about a playoff matchup. Their doctors and the team know much more about Willie Reed's condition than we do. If it seems like he's going to be out for a long period of time, sign a big guy, somebody that could play behind Whiteside and fill in those minutes at center, because they need it, and making the playoffs is the first priority, let alone matching up with the Cavaliers, which is going to be impossible anyway. So right now I think the number one thing would be to sign somebody to replace Willie Reed's minutes, and then after that, I mean, they could sign that player to 10-day contracts, right? Josh Richardson came back, which means that the Heat don't have that 16th roster spot available anymore, so it could be a situation where you just sign a big man for a 10-day contract, and then after that, go ahead and sign maybe a wing for the playoffs. I don't if you know, once Willie Reed comes back and that big guy that you signed to a 10-day contract falls out of the rotation, maybe you'd prefer a more versatile player at that point. So,
yeah, I'm looking at the top prospects in the D League right now. Vander Blue is listed as the number one prospect.
I don't think I've ever told anybody this.
Heard it. I don't think anybody's ever said that before.
Did he
but
go to Marquette?
Year, you
said. I think he went to Marquette.
Yes, he did. Yeah, former Marquette standout.
Yeah, he was. I watched one Marquette game when Vander Blue was in college, and he just kept getting to the rim, like at will. He's a star. I'm exaggerating. No. I'm using hyperbole, but
no, sure. If he does. If he's that kind of player, though, who gets to the rim, he kind of fits in with what Miami does, right?
Sure.
The whole drive and kick offense, he might be a good fit there. Somebody who can, you know, spell some minutes for Deion Waiters if he gets into foul trouble, if Tyler Johnson gets hurt as he's wont to do. I mean,
he's the number one
rated potential
prospect in the D League, like you said.
Right. So there's options. Keith Benson is actually the sixth top prospect, although I think this needs to be updated because they still have Quinn Cook listed there, who's obviously with the Dallas Mavericks. We saw him there a couple nights ago. So,
Eric Moreland?
Eric Moreland's the fifth top prospect.
A tweener forward. He could play a little bit of small forward, probably mostly power forward at this point. I don't know, Elijah Millsap. If the Heat couldn't get Paul, maybe you get Elijah. it's working for the Mavericks. They got the other Curry.
That's a potential move. How about Ben Gordon? You know, his offense has never been.
Oh, my God, he's in the D League. Poor Ben Gordon.
He's lighting it up there. He's listed now as the 14th best prospect. So you wonder if you could get a guy like that. His instant offense, mm-hmm. It seems like he'd be a better fit for a team that just has a clear role for him to come in, play 5 minutes, and just man a second or third team and just kind of just shoot and shoot and shoot and don't stop shooting. That's what he's going to do anyway. That's what his whole career has been.
As far as
Elijah Millsap, I wonder if maybe you can bring him in there, kind of sell the culture on him a little bit, and then be like, hey, talk to your brother when he's a free agent this summer. You can't picture Pat Riley pulling him under the arm and saying, look, we love everything that Millsap brothers represent.
The old Goran and Zoran move.
Hell yeah, it's worked in the past. Good old Zoji. Yeah, what was his nickname? I forgot now.
I didn't know he had a nickname. I thought he was just the other Dragic.
Zoran Dragic.
All right, well, now that we got our Zoran Dragic shout-out in there, I think it's a good time to end this, because now at this point we're just looking through lists of free agents on the internet. So
on a D-League, no less. Top D-League watch. We should bring our friend of the program, Chris Reichert, in to talk about the top D-League prospects.
Yeah. If the Heat have a spot open long enough, I think that's a good idea. All right. Well, that's a good place to end it. How do we usually do this? That's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day so that you can get riveting conversation between me and David looking through free agent lists impromptu. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.